This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor with my colleagues Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, Joseph Umar, executive director of Secure Free Society. Reuters headline, Washington, within these last days. Venezuela's opposition parties have warned that they are likely to withdraw backing for Juan Guaido's Washington-endorsed interim government in 2023. Four people familiar with the matter said, raising questions about the future of the country's overseas holdings. It goes on to report, Guaido has been the public face of the country's opposition since the U.S. and many other governments rejected Nicolas Maduro's 2018 re-election as a sham. Joseph, Guaido is the face of the opposition. He's been in exile. There have been reports now and again of possible negotiations hosted by Mexico. Is this the end for Guaido? This hint that they may drop him?
Yeah, really, John, President Juan Guaido has really been hanging on to international support, mostly from the United States and the UK. And that's had very significant legal ramifications because the two main sources of economic leverage in some sense that the Guaido government has had in the negotiations with the Maduro regime has been the gold and the oil. And part of the oil is under control of Guaido because of Citgo. It's a U.S.-based company, subsidiary of PDVSA. And that's been a large legal battle to maintain control of that. That was something that they did under the Trump administration. And the second is the gold in the Bank of England in the U.K. And that there was a large legal battle there as well where Maduro tried to claim that that gold was his. Fortunately, the courts in the U.K. Sided in the favor of Juan Guaido and said no because of Guaido's recognition diplomatically in the international community, they said it on then. So if they drop Guaido's recognition, then you have to think about the legal ramifications of both Citgo and the gold in the Bank of England becoming under the control of the Maduro regime. So that's something serious. That said, I do think that Juan Guaido doesn't have much political force. I think he's been out of pretty much the favor of the Venezuelan people, both in the country and outside the country for a very long time. The Guaido government is very fragmented. It's not what it once was in 2019. It's basically fragmented into different groupings, and those groupings are constantly fighting with each other. And to be very honest and frank, John, I don't think the Guaido government's done itself many favors because they made many mistakes in this whole period of basically their interim government. That's not saying that I don't think the United States should continue. I think the United States should continue to recognize him because there really is no other option in the country. But that said, I don't think it's I don't think the Guaido government really has much political power.
And Ernesto, the puzzle about Caracas, the U.S. has made it very clear that it opposes Maduro. And yet now and again, we have reason to believe there's a conversation going on between Washington and Caracas over the future. Sometimes it's about oil. Sometimes it's about hostages. And I mentioned a report in the Washington in the Wall Street Journal identifies one hostage who was held for years and tortured, tormented, his health broken by the brutality of the regime. Certainly not suggestive that there's a future for Caracas, for the Maduro government in Washington. And yet there seems to be every now and then a moment for a conversation. Now, I understand you don't make friends with your friends. You make friends with your enemies. But do you see there is a possibility of rapprochement between Caracas and Washington with the exit of Guaido?
Unfortunately, yes. I think there is mounting pressure to side with, let's say, to normalize Maduro, which is a huge mistake. Maybe it has to do with the influence of Cuba and Cuba-linked thoughts in Washington. I wish it were not true, but I think that's a huge mistake if the U.S. Normalizes Maduro. Guaido, I know it's a fragile situation. There's all the problems that Joseph referred to, internal problems within the Guaido camp. But, I mean, that's the only way to save Venezuela. And I still think it's possible. It was clearly close to us back in 2019. What was lacking was more international support, especially from the UN and from the European Union and from the, let's say, the center-left governments in European countries. So I mean, sometimes you have to make choices in life, right? And based on principle, and not based on let's say what seems more feasible. And I see that in U.S. policy now, and other countries' policy, and even in Brazilian policy sometimes. That this is the right thing to do, but it's too difficult, so let's not do it. Let's go to the easy approach. And that's not how you change the world. That's not how you save democracy. That's now how you will defend the free world.
Joseph, other reasons not to make a gesture towards Caracas until it changes its way. This is from Caracas in these last days. The last five members of an Iran-linked cargo plane grounded in Argentina arrived in Venezuela, according to footage from Venezuelan state television. An Argentine court ruled last week there was no evidence to charge the two Venezuelans and three Iranians for links to terrorist activities. The Venezuelan transport minister, Ramon Velasquez, told the television he was celebrating, quote, the freedom of 19 crew members who were kidnapped by the Argentine judiciary. So is this the end of the mystery that we didn't solve, what that aircraft was for? Does this mean that Argentina and Venezuela have now decided there will be no further investigation of the links possible between the murder of one prosecutor in Argentina 7 years ago and the murder of another another prosecutor most recently in Colombia? Is it all over now, Joseph?
Well, no, John, not necessarily. The plane that was seized by the Argentine authorities, the Venezuelan plane, the cargo plane, is still in custody of the Argentine federal police. And that's going to be much more difficult to release than whether the passengers or the cargo. So that case, in terms of legally speaking, isn't over yet. Now, the individuals, the flight crew that was very suspicious because they were IRGC members, at least a few of them. They're going to get away. They have already gotten away. They're back in Venezuela. And who knows? They stopped in Bolivia, which is very interesting. And it wasn't a layover. They stopped in Bolivia for a significant period of time. And who knows if they're going to go back to Iran, right? Iran's having a lot of turmoil right now, also with the protests. But I do think that this is an ongoing struggle. And this is, you know, the plane incident, I always described it as an opportunity because it's not every day that you find the IRGC, you catch them in the middle of an action or an operation, which is what happened in the case of Argentina. But that doesn't mean that's the beginning of the IRGC's operations, nor is the end. This is going to continue and it's going to intensify. I think the protests that are happening in Iran on the other side of the world are actually going to intensify Iran's actions in Latin America because they've always looked at Latin America as their deterrent for any U.S. actions or things that if they try to support the protesters in any way. And one last thing, John, on this, there's a news that's kind of been breaking in Argentina over the weekend, and I don't know how much of this has been validated, but it has to do with a potential leak that's been happened by some hackers that have leaked files or alleged files of Iran's nuclear program. And why this has made such a splash in Argentina is because allegedly in those documents that have been leaked, which is, I think, either 5 or 50 gigabytes of information, is quite a bit. There is potential information, damning information against Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner in Argentina's secret negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program. So I don't know if that's been verified or validated. I've been contacted pretty much throughout a whole lot this weekend about this. I do know that one of the things that has been come out and it seems to be verified is a list of journalists that Iran has paid in Argentina to essentially basically engage in disinformation about the nuclear program, about the protests, about pretty much anything that's in Iran's interest.
Ernesto, back to the Brazilian election. Could go either way. Don't know. We'll get the information next week. Is there a significant difference between President Bolsonaro and former President Lula da Silva when it comes to the bad actors in Caracas? Is there any reason to believe there would be a policy of significance if Lula da Silva was president or if Mr. Bolsonaro continues?
Yes, there is a strong difference. Lula, if he is elected and his government, would clearly and explicitly side with Caracas, side with all the bad regimes in Latin America. They would support them diplomatically and certainly financially as well, economically. They would basically put the whole of Latin America in the hands of the totalitarian bloc formed by China, Russia, Iran, So they would transform Latin America in a some sort of greater Cuba. That's for sure. They tried that before, but they didn't go all the way. So now I think they would say, well, now we can't lose this opportunity, and we're going to do it. So that's what we can foresee. As for Bolsonaro, today, and I'm critical of that, it's a policy of some sort of indifference to what is going on in the region. But indifference is, in this case, is already better. But I have the hopes. I hope that Bolsonaro can come back to a much more proactive stance and use the popularity that he still has. And I'm pretty sure this will lead to his reelection. I think he will be reelected, and use this domestic force in order to project power in favor of democracy and freedom around the region as well. And I think this can be done. We have some hope, at least, with Bolsonaro.
Final detail about Venezuela, Joseph, watching this right now. The diplomatic relations between Colombia and Venezuela, is that a significant advance for the Caracas regime? Is that half step towards Washington, or is it a completely different matter having to do with the relationship of these two men, Maduro and Petro?
It's a significant step. It's huge. It's huge for the Maduro regime. I mean, they put a lot of effort into helping someone, helping specifically Gustavo Petro get elected and become the president. And since he's been president, basically, it couldn't be gone better for the Maduro regime. They've renewed diplomatic relations. They're renewing commercial relations. And this is the key. They're also going to be renewing military relations. That hasn't happened yet, but what I'm hearing in Colombia, that's on the way. Second to that would be if Lula da Silva wins his election in Brazil. That would be a significant advance for the Maduro regime and pretty much consolidate their control of South America, because President Bolsonaro has been one of the most steadfast opponents of the Maduro regime, going back to the time that Ernesto was in the foreign ministry was the foreign minister, or even to today. He hasn't opened up relations with Venezuela, and I think it's because of the work that was done back then. So this is going to be major developments. The United States, the Biden administration, needs to be very clear that if it looks to normalize relations with the Maduro regime, it's going to empower authoritarians all throughout Latin America, not just in Venezuela, also in Nicaragua and Cuba and Bolivia, and new emerging authoritarians that are on the way up inside the region. So if the Biden administration is about saving or preserving democracy and democratic institutions, it really needs to be careful about normalizing relations with one of the most brutal dictatorships in the region.
We're going to Mexico. Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, Joseph Umar, executive director of Secure Free Society. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.